whatever decision you're facing, work, home, personal life, what's my next step? This is what we're typically asking. It seems like what we're asking God for is, everybody say this yellow word, direction. God, I need your direction. Should I turn the lease and upgrade for my family, or should I not? God, should I go over and introduce myself to the neighbors, or should I call the cops on their kids? Which one is it? We're looking for direction. The assumption, right, that there is a will that God has for me to take a specific next step or to make a specific next decision. And this is a decision, or it's a somehow it's a will of direction that God gives me in advance to help me with my daily decisions. And what I'm saying is, this will of direction, for a lot of us, the way we understand it is an illusion. And the author, Kevin DeYoung, who wrote the book that's helping us with our supplemental Grow on Your Own material, Just Do Something, says it's a will of illusion because God doesn't really promise to give us daily promptings and next steps related to his specific will that he's revealing to us, or our secret plan that he has for us. And our relationship with God trends towards, if we are looking for this kind of direction, our relationship with God kind of trends towards hide and seek. Like every day, God, I know you're out there, and I know you've revealed it to me, and if I tune in enough, and if I am maybe even obedient enough, or maybe if I do the right things and say the right things and go the right places, attend church enough and sing the right songs, or I do the right amount of devotions, then you're going to reveal it to me. And our relationship with God becomes kind of like he's hiding and we're seeking. Or I mentioned maybe recently, I mentioned that our relationship with God kind of becomes a magic eight ball relationship, right? God, I know you're trying to speak to me. What is it that you want to say? And I shake the eight ball and then see what he says to me based on some kind of sign or wonder, or as the author of that book says, Kevin DeYoung, a liver quiver or liver shiver. Something happens and I say, this is it. God's revealed it to me. And it tends to get superstitious. Looking for things to align in the sky versus randomly that pop off the page and then there's his direction. So our relationship with God can really turn into hide and seek or magic eight ball. So how can we break free? How do we break free to make sound, solid decisions that are better? How do we take bold action rather than shrinking back and waiting and waiting and waiting and kind of meandering around? Here's what we're going to kind of summarize today in our last segment of the message series. Here's the big idea. This is a lot. I know it's a lot. Can you slow your brain down and take it in? It doesn't matter. We're going to go through this anyway. We are to seek God first, right? Where do we start? Seek God first. That's where we start. Seek God, not his plans, not his next step for us, but seek him, himself, his face, who he is, all that he is. Then let our hearts be drawn to love him. Then let us express our love by obeying him, right? God says, if you love me, what do? Sing loud? Not necessarily. You love. If you love me, you obey me. And grow to be more like Jesus, right? We talked about how God's more interested in who you become than where you go or what you're doing. So once we're doing that, once that is kind of shaping up in our lives, once that has some momentum in our lives, once we've kind of got the idea and we kind of understand, seek God first, love him, obey him, all of those things are in place, then once we're doing that, we can and we should decide to just do something. Just do something. Just get out and make a decision. Get out and take a big step. Get out and take a small step. Maybe that's the way. The first question is this, and this shows up in the book of Ecclesiastes. I love the book of Ecclesiastes. I love Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Lamentations. These things are fascinating. At first, if you're new to Ecclesiastes, you're like, wow, is that dark? I don't know that it's very encouraging to hear over and over and over again, look, everything in life meaningless, right? Anybody looking for a little little kickstart in the morning, found yourself passing by Ecclesiastes looking for something a little brighter and more fun. But Ecclesiastes actually says, it's possible that you and I have a motive that's driving us to discover our specific next step. It's possible that there's a motive that's kind of revealed by the book of Ecclesiastes when you are saying to yourself, I don't want to miss what God wants for me. I want what he wants. I know it's something specific. I don't want to miss it. And I know it's out there. I know it's something specific. And the author of Ecclesiastes said it's possible that something's driving that's worth kind of thinking about, focusing on. And Ecclesiastes is kind of an odd book, but it's more relevant than ever. Here's what the author says about a possible motivation problem. It's possible that you and I are stuck waiting for God to reveal something specific, a secret plan or a hidden path, because we are chasing something in vanity and passion and passivity. It's possible that we are chasing after what someone else has. Now, some of you are like, Pastor, this is not me. I got nothing. I don't want nothing. Totally content. Fine. Not for you. But for a lot of people, their lives are in chaos and stress and anxiety because what they have, listen, it's not enough. Their kids aren't good enough. Their spouse isn't what they want. Their home isn't big enough. It doesn't look right. Doesn't feel right. Their circles and status aren't exactly what they were hoping for. And here's what the author of Ecclesiastes says. Then I observed something in all the world that most people are motivated to success because they envy their neighbors. They have this drive to get what's next and decide something specific because they want something someone else has, but this too is meaningless. It's meaningless to envy. Now, what's the problem? The problem is, if you're motivated to success and you want God to show you how to get it because someone else has it and you don't, it's a plan, a fast track to frustration, right? It's a fast track to emptiness. Look how the author describes it. In fact, it's like chasing the wind. What does that mean, chasing the wind? It means you're going to do it forever and catch it never. You're going to do it forever, same thing, over and over again, and then eventually realize, I didn't catch nothing. Envy. Someone else has something we want. Searching for and expecting ultimate satisfaction in work. If I have Tirza said it perfectly this morning. I am so miserable, discontented, lonely, lost, empty, and frustrated. If I just knew which job to take, if I just knew what state to live in, if I just knew what path to take for school, if I just knew what decision to make and who to hire, who to fire, whether to open or close, if I just had what I needed next in my work, in my family, in success, and all of this is good things, right? They're all good things that we have. Yet ultimately those things, they don't satisfy. We don't have our deepest gratification in those things. We don't find our greatest joy in those things. Finding the good life, the most respectable life, our kids, are of course the model of perfect family. The things that we want that are so compelling, a respectable degree, a respectable career, puts me in life sabotaging debt. To have all those things, best vacation, the coolest friends, those things sometimes come and we want direction about those because we're chasing the wind. We have a passion for vanity, a passion to kind of treat ourselves. So we're not only prone to living lives of vanity, we also find ourselves here in a passion for God, but little caveat here. Look what the author, Kevin DeYoung, says. Our passion for God is often nothing more than a passion to have God make our search for vanity a successful one. Ouch. Ouch. God, I don't have it. I need it. Someone else has it. I want it. I'm looking for the best of everything. I'm unsatisfied. If I had an upgraded marriage, family, and all that, and all that's good. But if my passion for God is so that He gives me bigger, better, more, it's like chasing the wind. And also, we're asking God, bless our search for vanity. May it be a successful one. Now, this is not everybody. This is some people. In fact, the author of Ecclesiastes says, what I've seen is most people. And I don't know how you categorize yourself, but worth asking. I was found myself deep in prayer this week, seeking God with one big question. God, is it your will for me to play the $1 billion Mega Millions for the first time in my life? Just speak to me, God. And I thought I heard him say yes. My friend Dave Hertwick says, it's almost bad stewardship not to play. And I brought up his name because I, too, thought to myself, that's very wise. I believe that's biblical advice, my friend. Then, after I believed that God was prompting me, yes, I should play for the good of the world, you know, because if I won, it would help the world. The people who need it most would be helped, right? So then, of course, came the next question. God, thank you for affirming that and directing me to the Mega Million Billion Dollar Lottery. All I'm asking now is the right numbers. That's all I'm asking. Very specific, God, and you can't give me any numbers bigger than I don't know what it is, but it's got to be within this range. And I wouldn't mind if they were in the right order. And a lot of us spend a lot of our lives doing this. We're looking for God to tell us something that He has no desire, no plan to tell us. In other words, He's already revealed to us all the things that we ought to be doing. Seek Him. Prioritize His kingdom. Love Him with our heart, whole heart, mind, soul, and strength. Love our neighbors. Not tolerate our neighbors. Not like our neighbors occasionally if we agree with them, but love our neighbors, Samaritans too. Insiders and outsiders. And eventually, ultimately, that we fear God enough to do everything that He's put before us in the Scripture. So it's so easy to misconstrue our piety with passivity, that we're waiting for God to speak to us. It's going to be something specific. And then, of course, I'm actually doing nothing as I spiritualize this restlessness and this searching and seeking. Now here's the solution. Here's the solution. Searching for the will of God, solution for you today. It's actually, again, it's in Ecclesiastes, one of my favorite books, and the conclusion of this book is basically it's all meaningless, but there's a little bit more. It's kind of grouped with the two other books. Pastor Rich so eloquently described the need for the book of Proverbs. Well, you know what Proverbs says? Proverbs basically says this: if you do the right things, good things will happen to you. Isn't that true? Proverbs says use wisdom. If you use wisdom, you'll find that good things happen to you in your life around you. And then the book of Ecclesiastes says, if you use wisdom, sometimes life doesn't work out the way you expected it to. The book of Ecclesiastes says, sometimes you do the right things and the wrong things happen. And then the book of Job comes along and says, you could be favored by God and wholeheartedly righteous and devoted to Him, and all that you experience is suffering and sorrow. You got to have those three books put together. They have to be read together, right? And so the author of Ecclesiastes comes to a conclusion, and he says, here's my final conclusion that I want you to settle on and just own this. Check this out. He says, that's the whole story. The whole story, by the way, of Ecclesiastes is life is meaningless. You expect something, it doesn't happen. You do the right thing, bad things happen. It's all vanity. It's like chasing the wind. Eventually, everybody dies and you go away with nothing and you're kind of like, well, what did I just spend my whole life doing for? And here's what he says. Here's the conclusion to the whole story. You're going to hear it here this morning. Here's now my final conclusion. Fear God. Now, if you're here for some specifics, you want an action plan from Pastor Dan on how to make better decisions and take bolder actions, this is what I'm going to leave you with. This is the solution. The whole story has a solution. Here's where you start. Fear God. What does that mean? Pastor Rich explained that to us last week. Fear doesn't mean I'm afraid God's going to hurt me. Fear is I know I can hurt God with my disobedience. So it's possible that you discover here that humans are made for God. They are made to come alive, submitted to and surrendered to God, that as we fear God and live by his design, we become fully alive, fully ourselves. If you're facing a decision today, let me speak to those of you who are facing a decision and you already know what it is. It comes to your mind. Maybe you've jotted it down. Maybe you've been writing about it recently. Here's where you start. Get right with God. That's where you start. Be careful you don't start by subscribing to a self-help leadership blog. Be careful you don't start with ordering a specific book. Be careful you don't start in all these different directions, gathering your friends for wisdom, all of that helpful. Start by getting your heart right with God. And what do I mean by that? It means that I have to ask myself this question. Who does my life belong to? Is it belong to me or does it belong to God? It requires us to ask the question of ourselves, who am I trying to please? Am I trying to please someone else, my parents, my boss, my kids, my spouse, my spiritual leaders, my coach, my teacher, my professor? Who are you? Who am I trying to please? Fear God says, I'm trying to please God. That's it. I don't have any other people that I'm aiming to please. If we must fear something, we have to fear God. Secondly, here's the other part of it. After you fear God, obey his commands. Again, right? It's kind of like, I've heard this before. I've seen this before. I know the word obey. But if you want to express your love for God, if you're fearful of God, you're submitted to him in awesome reverence of who he is, which is what fear means, then what this means, obey his commands, means demonstrate your love for him with action. Submit and embrace and cultivate your relationship with God in such a way as that you're submitted and responsive to what he's asking you to do, what he desires for you to do, who he desires for you to become. We call that sanctification, becoming who God's designed you to become. And if you're going to be anxious about anything, be anxious to keep his commands. Be anxious and engaged in developing obedience in your life. Check this out. Here's the motive. The motive is, this is what the author of Ecclesiastes says, by the way, here's the motive. Don't forget, be alert, please consider this. God will judge us for everything we do. Every decision we make, every action we take will be judged, including the things that are secret. Well, what's secret? Secrets are your motives, your attitudes. You know that one of the things that Jesus does with the gospel is he helps us see that we can even do the right things for sinful reasons, right? For wrong reasons. And it's everything, whether we are humble or prideful, whether we are obedient or disobedient. Everything you choose, everything you decide matters to God. There is a judgment and there will be a judgment. It will include every secret thing, desires and motives that are driving our decisions, that are driving our behaviors, all of that will be judged. So the answer to the question, what's the will of God for my life? It kind of requires some different questions. So I've got a few questions that I'm going to offer to you that are specific, okay? So if you are looking for action plan, I'm going to give you some new questions to ask. Because maybe the question isn't, what is it exactly that God wants me to do? Maybe the questions sound more like this. Am I surrendered and submitted to God? Or am I surrendered and submitted to my parents' approval? Or my spouse's failures? And that's what I tuned into. Here's the question. Am I surrendered and submitted to God? Whatever you're surrendered to and submitted to is in control of your decisions. If you're chasing the approval of someone else, they're in control of your decisions. Fear God first. Start there. Prioritize His kingdom, His values, His priorities. Get to know Him. Submit your heart to Him. By the way, Adam and Eve breaking away from God the Father, the creator of the universe, it's not rocket science. You know what they decided? Here's what they decided. I'm not surrendered and submitted to Him anymore. I'm living for myself. It's independence from God. It's self-reliance. It's real simple. And for those of you who like to say Adam and Eve were fools, there they were in the garden, everything was perfect. I can't believe they did that. We do it all day, every day. Live for ourselves and live by ourselves. So, second question for you today. Do I trust and treasure Jesus? Or am I mostly just saying I do? Or am I mostly just hoping I do? Am I mostly just singing that I do? Or is my trust and treasure rooted in my talent, my intellect, my independence? Is my treasure really my respectable family, my public reputation? It's possible that your treasure really is having control over your own life. Is Jesus, here's the question, is Jesus my greatest joy? And is He my deepest satisfaction? That question is a vital question when you're trying to figure out what should I do? Where should I go next? Next question, have I put others first? So now I'm trying to make a decision. It's a big decision. I don't know exactly where to go and how to get there. One of the questions, instead of what do I do next, is this, have I put others first? Am I humbling myself? Is this next step about me or is it about someone else? Am I elevating the needs of my spouse, my children, my neighbors, my coworkers, my teammates above my own? Has my love of God provoked me to take action to lower myself and elevate the least of these? And that'll give us a lot of direction on what to do with our money, what to do with our time, and how to make better decisions. Next question. Will I grow by doing this, going this direction, making this choice, taking this step, actually launching out in this area? Will I grow in holiness by doing this? Will it cause me to grow? You know, God is more focused, in case you missed it, on who you are becoming than He is on where you go or what you're doing. Do you know that? He's more focused on who you are becoming. And what this means is you can become who God has designed you to be and what He wants for you to be no matter where you're going or no matter what you're doing, no matter where you are or where you're headed. Holiness means being set apart, Christ-like loves and attitudes, priorities. Moral purity means living by God's design. All of this has to do with making decisions that cause me to grow in holiness. And we talked recently about how some of those decisions are not open doors, they're closed doors. And we still get God growing us in those circumstances. So, last question, where could I make a decision and where could I do something right now? That's pretty specific. What can I do right now? If I'm doing all those other things, I fear God, I'm prioritizing His kingdom first, I love Him, I'm actually yielded to obedience to Him, I want what He wants for my life, what can I do right now? What decision or action could I make by relying on the direction, on the principles, on the wisdom of the Proverbs? Specifically, what bold action could I take as I'm listening to God in prayer? Here's what our author says from our supplemental. The way of wisdom is a way of life. Grab this. Don't lose this. Don't lose this. You don't have to write all this down. Just buy the book. It's in there. Or it's in the notes, by the way, even easier. The way of wisdom is a way of life. If you are a person of prayer, check. Full of regular good counsel from others, check. And steeped in the truth of the word, I know what God says, especially wrap my whole heart around who Jesus is, the treasure of Jesus, and also the Proverbs. You should begin to make many important decisions instinctively and some of them even quickly. Do whatever else you like with whomever you like, wherever you like, and you'll be walking in the will of God if those things are happening in your life. So, don't forget, the will of God, it's not a specific path for you to take that he expects us to figure out, right? It's not a secret hidden plan that he's waiting to reveal to you if you could just tune in and solve his riddle. Instead, we trust the will of God for us is his sovereign decree. He's causing things to happen, and we obey his will of desire, right? His good word for us. But in no sense should you and I be scrambling around doing nothing, hoping for a specific formula or recipe. Does that make sense? Is that clear? I hope that's encouraging to you. You can literally do something. Now, finally, really quick, last thing. God's will for your life is actually simpler, harder, and easier than finding direction. It's simpler because there's no secrets we must discover. It's harder because denying ourselves, living for others, fearing God, and being obedient is more difficult than finding a new job and moving away, right? It's also easier because God commands what he wills, and Augustine says that he provides what he demands for us. What does that mean? How can we possibly get this done? By the way, how can we possibly do all that you've heard needs to be done? Fear God and obey him because judgment is real. How do we do that? You know what's fascinating? God doesn't tell you to do something that he doesn't provide the power for you to do. We're doing a renovation in my living room. And when we started, we had to demo the old 50, 60-year-old ceiling. And so I put my two teenage boys on the job. So we got a ceiling. We got to pull it down. And here's how we started, reaching up into the soft kind of over time kind of a soft board kind of a ceiling and pulling down handfuls of the ceiling. And I had made very clear that we're going to get the ceiling down and it isn't going to take us very long. And then I saw handfuls of ceiling coming down. I thought, this is going to take a long time. So I grabbed a couple of tools, a little claw and a bar, and said, let's do this. Let's pop this into the nails. We'll pry them off a little bit lower. And sure enough, the whole panel wiggled off, and we did panels at a time rather than handfuls at a time. And I thought to myself, it's a vivid picture of how God works. Here's what I desire of you, and here. Now, I'm going to provide everything you need to do that. I'm going to provide the tools that you need to do that which I want you to accomplish or to become that who I have made you to be. God doesn't expect you to fear him on your own without his help. God himself gives his children the will to walk in his ways. Can you imagine that? He says, walk in my ways, and then he gives you the will to do it. He gives you the will to walk in his ways. But he doesn't do that by revealing specific steps that you and I need to take. The Spirit gives us desires, according to Galatians, that are the opposite of what our sinful nature desires. The Spirit gives us those desires. He leads and directs us himself by his Spirit in his ways. I love that. We're not stranded. We're not trying to figure it out. But instead, he does something profound. Look at this. He gives us a new heart, not next steps. How does he give us a new heart? The scripture says that before he saves our soul, before he regenerates our heart, we have a heart that's described like stone. We do our own thing for our own reasons, to live for our own glory. And God pulls that heart out of us at regeneration upon our faith and trust in Jesus, and he replaces it with a heart of what? Some of you know this? Heart of flesh. What is it about that flesh heart? It's soft to the Spirit of God because we're full of the Spirit of God. And he's not primarily giving you and I new direction. He's giving us a new heart. That's what we have to do his will. So if you're not yet a Christian and you have new decisions to make, start here. Fear God. turn your heart over to God and allow him to replace that stony, self-sufficient, self-righteous, self-absorbed, independent from God heart with something tender and soft. Be careful you're not turning over to God your list of problems. Turn over your heart. You start with fear. Your anxiety needs to be devoted to, instead of what do you do next, but who's in charge of my life? Who has my heart? If you are a Christian, you've got decisions to make, you're looking to take some action in something that's happening in your life, you can start fresh today by obeying him. Who does he want me to become? And I seek God in prayer. I get wisdom. I picture this happening in our continuing the conversation groups this week. People having conversations about decisions they're facing, and they're saying, I need wisdom from God. I'm in prayer. I'm sorting through who he wants me to become. Let these principles that we've talked about help you make better decisions. Take bolder action. Let's pray together. Father, I'm praying for every person today who's on the edge of something in their life they perceive to be big or something small that's holding them back. And Father, you already know what they need. You already know exactly where they're at, whether they're near you or far from you. And I am mindful today that there are people who are listening in to this message who are far from you. They want to be close, but their hearts are far. They want to be right with you, but up until right now, they're wrong with you, unsubmitted, fearing other people, not fearing you. And I pray today that you would divinely, miraculously intervene in...